Welcome to Smart Talk. I'm Scott Lamar. Central Pennsylvania and Pennsylvania overall are home to some of the nation's finest and most respected colleges and university. That is a perfect description of Franklin and Marshall College in Lancaster, one of the city and region's anchor institution, not just in education. F&M has a new president, Dr. Barbara Altman, and we're pleased to have Dr. Altman on Smart Talk in our continuing series of conversations with the leaders of the region's colleges and universities. Dr. Altman, welcome to Smart Talk.
Good morning, Scott. I'm really thrilled to be here with you. Thanks for having me.
If you have a question or comment, give us a call, 1-800-729-7532. Send an email to smarttalk@witf.org. You can leave a question or a comment on WITF's Facebook page, on Twitter. We are at SmartTalkWITF. Again, the phone number, 1-800-729-7532. I'm going to say welcome to Central Pennsylvania as well, but you were at Bucknell before coming to F&M, so it's not exactly like you are a foreigner coming into Lancaster or Central Pennsylvania. So you've been on campus as president at Franklin and Marshall since August. Your impressions and thoughts of what you've seen up close?
First of all, I'm thrilled to be in Lancaster. It's a great, great place to live. And every minute I have a little bit of time, I explore some more of the city. But the good news about Franklin and Marshall is that I've had what I can only describe as the new president's favorite experience, which is to find out that the school is even better than you knew coming in. It's a superb school. I'm really impressed. I feel really honored to be representing Franklin and Marshall.
When you say better than you expected, in what ways?
Well, I've been in the academy. I'm a professor by training. I was a full-time professor for 22 or 23 years before I became an administrator. I've seen a lot of students, undergraduate and graduates, and these are, bar none, the finest undergraduates I've ever seen. And the faculty is stellar. This is an outstanding, outstanding group of people. So the academic integrity of the place, the strength of the education we provide, is really superb.
When you were in the classroom, what did you teach?
I am a professor of French and of medieval studies. My research area is 14th and 15th century French poetry, so I'm a linguist.
When was the last time you were in a classroom? As a teacher.
As a teacher, about 3 years ago.
3 years ago. Do you miss it?
Oh, yes. There's nothing like the energy that comes from a great class. It's the most exhausting and the most exhilarating thing you can do.
I ask that question because almost all the college and university presidents I speak with, and I've spoken with dozens over the years, always say that I missed the classroom or find a way to get back into the classroom while they still are an administrator.
I'm hoping. It's not going to happen this year, not in year one and probably not in year two, but I can look ahead to year three and hold out some hope that that'll happen. In the meantime, I'm happy to guest lecture anytime anybody wants me to.
But what you described as French and medieval, French medieval history, that sounds like something that you would only find at a liberal arts college.
Yes. Is that a leading question?
Yes, it is, because there's more to it. There are those today. First of all, F&M has a reputation, as I said, one of the nation's most respected liberal arts colleges in the country. U.S. News and World Report, their latest rankings, has F&M rated as one of the best in the country. But there is a but there. There are some who question whether a liberal arts education is appropriate today, whether it means as much today as what it used to. What do you say to that?
My answer, Scott, and I think that all of the outcome measures prove that this is true, is that a liberal arts education is actually more important today than it ever has been. Universities and colleges have three missions. One is to transmit knowledge, one is to create knowledge, and the third is to preserve knowledge. And if we stop teaching some of the things that teach our students and adults of any age about the world and our history, then we've lost something really precious. The other answer is, it doesn't matter what you study, it matters how you study and the kind of work habits and analytical skills that you build. So you can do a major in any field and you can end up doing anything as a profession. We've mapped it at this school and others and put a list of majors down one side of the page and a list of career paths down the other, and any major can lead to any career path.
So it isn't necessarily a case where your major, that you have one or two career paths or jobs or futures ahead of you.
No, we're not in the business of vocational training. That's very, very important education. There are many different ways of doing post-secondary education, and I have the greatest respect for all of my colleagues in the area who are in different sorts of schools, leading really important schools. Thaddeus Stevens, Pennsylvania College of Art and Design, Millersville University, Elizabethtown, Harrisburg area community colleges, they're all really important educational institutions, and not every school is for every student. But what we do is a kind of unique education that I would posit prepares students not for one job, but for any job, and to help be part of the leaders of the next generation who are actually going to create and define and make up the next jobs. So while we're looking at millions of people displaced by new technologies from the jobs that they're trained for now in the next decade, the folks that we're training have the agility, the nimbleness, the analytical skills, the communication skills to move through sectors and to help redefine them.
How important are those last traits that you just listed? Communication skills, analytical skills, creative thinking. You didn't use those words, but that's what you're describing.
Yeah, I think that is actually what we are teaching more than anything else. So I know engineering faculty, for example, in other schools who currently have given up on the term soft skills and have started calling them essential skills. It's what we need to prepare students with so that they can move through any sector, so that they have the ability to see comprehensively when they're problem solving or when they're trying to follow up on some of the world's greatest opportunities. So really, you can be, in fact, we have alumni, very illustrious alumni, who studied anthropology, for example, and now are running some of the most important business empires in this country. We have students who studied pre-med and became really successful fashion designers. We have people who came to play superlative D3 sports and have moved into the administration of major league sporting organizations. So it really doesn't matter what you study. It matters how you go about studying it. It's all about persistence and grit, learning from failure, and learning how to think.
You bristled somewhat. I'm not going to say you bristled a lot. There's not a flash of anger or anything there, but you bristled somewhat at that suggestion that there are people out there that say that liberal arts education isn't as valuable as it once was. The people who say that, and then what they're thinking, and you touched on it, is they're thinking that tomorrow's jobs, even today's jobs, that technology is so important and that a liberal arts education is not preparing them for that. Ask a couple questions here. What do you say to those people? I kind of get the sense that you're thinking they're thinking narrowly about a liberal arts education, or maybe thinking about the liberal arts education that they think of as a stereotypical liberal arts education.
I have so many answers to that, Scott, that I have to think about where to start. So first of all, I think we need to really analyze and take apart the term liberal arts. It sets up people for a misunderstanding about what we do. There's nothing political in the word liberal. There's nothing arts-related in the word arts. What it really means is the habits of mind, the skills, the intellectual rigor, the training that was designed for free citizens so that they could be active participants in a strong democracy. So I think one of the biggest favors we could do ourselves in our world of the liberal arts colleges, Franklin and Marshall and all of our peer schools across the country, is figure out what else to call it. And there's a lot of really smart people trying to come up with an alternative for that, a different term. We haven't found it yet, but what it really is broad thinking and the ability to problem solve and to work out challenges in a collaborative thinking environment with other smart people. So I think it's partly what we're called that is an issue. But I really understand, and I've got two boys, and they both went through college in very different schools. That's another story. If we get there, I'll tell you how I developed an interest in the liberal arts colleges themselves. But I think people are with legitimacy, they're worried about their children's future. They see a world in a certain degree of turmoil. They see economic uncertainty. They see a trend where it's no longer guaranteed that here in the United States, your children are probably going to be better off than you yourself were as a parent. So there, that is an anxiety that is entirely real. And what I will say to that is, if you look at all of our outcome measures, you will see that Franklin and Marshall grads and the grads from schools like us actually excel the minute they hit the real world outside our gates, because we prepare them for the real world. We're a slice of the real world, and that's how they study, which means that they're prepared on the other end. If whenever you're ready, I'll give you some statistics about how our kids do when they finish.
Well, I know that F&M has an 80% graduation rate.
Which, oh, it's higher than that.
Okay. This was, I think, came from U.S. News and World Report. But what is it?
It's closer to 90. We're in the high 80s, 88,
89. Okay, which is obviously very, very high compared to other universities and colleges. Yeah. Across the country. What about the percentage of those who become employed after graduation?
Oh, I am so happy to give you these numbers because they are hot off the press. So as of yesterday, we had tracked these, and for the 2018 graduating class, we poll those. We ask them for exit data about where they land. 91% of the graduates responded, so on a 91% response rate, which is very high. 97% of those were either in educational opportunities or employed 6 months out. So 90% of our student, 97% of our graduates from last May were in grad school, professional school, or in jobs within 6 months.
Why?
Why?
Yeah.
Because they know how to look. We train them. We professionalize them to enter the workforce at the same time as they're getting a powerhouse education. So when Franklin and Marshall graduates go to a job opportunity with an interviewer, they are well prepared. Their materials look great. They can speak with a great degree of expertise about the things that they have learned in college and the areas in which they've become expert. But they've also got great breadth of experience, so they're not narrowly focused. An employer will see that this person has the flexibility of training and the analytical skills to take on one job to start with, but to broaden into a series of jobs and to assume leadership potential and positions bit by bit. So our graduates are ready to take on the world, not only because of what they've studied, but I'll say it again, how they've studied.
You're listening to Smart Talk on WITF, your home for NPR News and all things regional. I'm Scott Lamar. Coming up on Smart Talk over the next few weeks, some of the topics that we're examining on the program: young people's healthy hearts, an LGBT traveling history exhibit, the 40th anniversary of the accident at Three Mile Island, and a bill proposing term limits for state legislators. We invite you to share your questions in advance by sending us a voice memo or leaving voicemail. See what's coming up at WITF.org/smarttalk. But today we're meeting with the new president of Franklin and Marshall College in Lancaster, Dr. Barbara Altman. And if you have a question or comment, talking a lot about higher education, not just about F&M, but higher education overall, 1-800-729-7532. Send an email to smarttalk@witf.org. On Twitter, we are at smarttalkwitf. Again, the phone number, 1-800-729-7532. This is the question I usually ask first, but I also, we were having a conversation, so I'll throw it in there now. What's your vision for F&M?
F&M is 232 years old. It's just about as old as this country. And my vision for F&M is that it continue to adapt, as it has done so brilliantly generation after generation, to the needs of the students who are coming our way, the best and the brightest from anywhere, any point of origin, because it is a place, it is the true residential undergraduate-focused institution. We have stayed absolutely true to that model. We have not decided to offer revenue-producing graduate degrees or partner with a public institution or reach out into other areas of education like online. We do not do online education because we really believe in the value of what happens when you take a really smart, really motivated young person, bring them onto our campus, and have them there 24/7. So the advantage of a residential college like ours is that having a student there day in, day out, seeing to their intellectual development, but also their social development, their spiritual development, their physical development through really, really well-run, very competitive D1 sports. When you put all those things together, it has a kind of a catalytic effect. It's much more powerful. It can be much more powerful than if you commute into school or if you're in a big city and you dissipate out into the urban landscape after class. We have this great community, and one of our values is community support. We talk about the F&M family, and it sounds a little corny, but it's really true. So we are seeing to the well-being and the development of those students, those 2,400 students, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week while they're with us. And that is like a little incubator. It allows them to make unbelievable progress. So when you look at a first-year student coming in fresh, whatever his or her or their point of origin or background, and then you compare that student to the juniors and the seniors 2 and 3 years later, there is this phenomenal increase in intellectual maturity and social maturity, in the ability to step in and really start leading wherever they land. So it's a model that's not for everybody. I'm not sure I would have thrived in that environment when I was a 17-year-old headed to college, but I think I would have matured much more quickly. So we're doing that kind of education, and we really want to bring in the best and the brightest from everywhere, from Lancaster, from the county of Lancaster, from the U.S., and from the world, who want to embrace that kind of education.
I just want to get back to one thing that you said, that you don't have an online curriculum. And that does go against what most institutions are doing today. Doesn't that limit you? I mean, let's face it, F&M and other colleges, university, you are competing for students.
Mm-hmm.
Doesn't that limit you for the institution itself, the college itself, and limit the opportunities for students?
It is a kind of education that's very important, and we need to have it available in very high quality for students who want to do or can only do that kind of work online. But what we place a lot of value in is mentorship. So it's a very different business if you put students in a classroom at a 9-to-1 student-faculty ratio, put them in the lab, put them on the sports field, put them in the dance studio, put them in the art studio, and have them work what we say, what we call side-by-side and mind-to-mind with an expert in the field who's really interested in mentoring this young person. The technology for doing online classes has gotten better and better, but it will never, ever replace the power of sitting in a room or walking through space or going on a field trip or performing in something with experts and with other students like-minded who are trying to achieve the same goal right next to you, shoulder to shoulder. That is actually something that we need more in 2019 than we've ever needed, because the students coming to us have grown up next to their screens, in front of their screens, and what they're lacking is that face-to-face interaction, which is a really critical skill for succeeding in the world.
The soft skills you talked about.
Yeah, the soft skills. So a little bit later this year, at the end of June, the Lancaster Chamber is organizing a panel of local college presidents. And the thing that I'll be talking about is why soft skills is actually a very misleading term. There's nothing soft about them. They're very hard to acquire, and they're absolutely essential for workforce success. In your workplace, you need to have all of those skills that have nothing to do with what you studied, but how you studied. To say that again, you have to have good communication skills, you have to have high emotional IQ, you have to be able to work in a group, you need to be able to problem solve, you have to be able to see far beyond your own task in order to see how it fits with everything else. So those soft skills are actually what employers are telling us that they need most. They're willing to train somebody to code. They're willing to teach someone the vocabulary or the skills or the algorithms of a particular job. What they can't take the time to teach is what students get in schools like ours by spending 4 years in very intensive, very rigorous study under the leadership of superlative faculty face to face.
Let's take a phone call from Michael in New Holland. Michael, you're on the air.
Good morning, Scott. Good morning to the president as well. I guess my question would come in two parts. Recently, we heard in the news last year, and I think WITF actually had something about it, Lebanon Valley College facing I don't know if it's declining enrollment, but concerns about enrollment and staffing, has started to put into a plan about how they were changing the school in order to meet the demands of incoming college freshmen, and more in particular, to make themselves more attractive. Just recently, in the last couple of weeks, I read online about the University of Akron in Ohio having to make major changes to their overall institution based on these challenges. The biggest concern I have, ma'am, and I still haven't gotten anybody to really answer this question to me, is we look at value, and you've explained very eloquently in the first quarter of this discussion today about what value is to you and what value is to F&M. I wouldn't argue that, and I wouldn't argue that F&M is a very balanced school. But relative to the huge disparity between the cost of the all-in cost of a public institution as well as an all-in cost to a private college, unless you're a Tier 1 private college or university, such as the Ivy League, or in a well-known private college or university, such as, say, Georgetown or Villanova, it makes it very difficult for, you know, parents and students to say, if I can take my son or daughter and their all-in cost to attend Penn State University, and I'm just using this as a hypothetical example, and say $30,000 a year, to do the same thing at your institution, maybe $50,000 a year. And that's pre-financial aid, right? So if you offer attractive financial aid packages, it may get it down closer to the cost all-in at, say, Penn State or Pitt or somewhere else, and that's before their financial aid. How do you convince a student that it's better to go to your school and as opposed to a public, private, or public university or college that offers the same value?
Thank you very much for your call. Before you answer that question, tuition at F&M, tuition, room, board fees is what?
It's just over $70,000 right now.
That's with everything per year.
Yes, it is.
Okay.
Yeah. Michael, thank you for asking that question. I'm really, really glad you asked it, because this is one of the most important messages that I have to take out all the time. So I'm going to back up just a second. So 52% of our student body receive financial aid, and that 52% receive all of the aid they need. So when they apply to us, we will meet their need, their stated need on the standard forms for the full 4 years of their education. That means that the discount rate, the average that our students pay of that full tuition package, comes out to only about 55% of the total. So here are some of the facts that I want to make sure you know. Our student loan debt per student when they graduate is actually considerably below the national average. At graduation now, our student loan debt average has fallen $6,000 from 2012. It was $33,200 for the class of 2012. The class of 2018 graduated with an average student loan debt of $27,149. And here's the part that I want to emphasize. I'm going to be loud and slow. That figure for Franklin and Marshall is significantly below the state average. The state average for Pennsylvania was last calculated at $35,200 per borrower, and the F&M average student loan debt is nearly $10,000 less than the average for Penn State grads. That's because of the kind of financial aid we can provide.
Actually, the last figure I saw, and maybe yours are more accurate, was that the average for student debt in Pennsylvania was $36,000. Actually, somebody sent me a note that government, let's see, I want to make sure that I have that today, that the Joint Senate-House Democratic Policy Committee is holding a hearing on making college more affordable for Pennsylvanians. That figure came out yesterday. Doesn't matter. We're talking $800. That's the highest figure in the country. Pennsylvania students have the highest figure in the country. But getting back to Michael's question, when you make the, okay, money-wise, that would probably, that sticker shock, as it's been called, is
very
what
real.
May keep a lot of students from even applying to an F&M. But when you, and again, this goes back to something I said earlier, that you are competing for students.
Mm-hmm.
When a student comes to you and says, I'm considering F&M or, I don't know, a public institution. I'm not going to mention one by name. But what are your selling points? I mean, you touched on them earlier, but what do you say to them?
That we invite applicants of any origin, so no matter what your financial situation and what you're able to pay, we want the best and the brightest, and we take them. The change in the student body has been remarkable over the last decade. Every class is stronger than the one before it. The test scores just go up and up and up and up. And unlike other schools in our category, we are just overwhelmed with applications. So one of the points of pride that I wanted to make sure to mention this morning is that our number of applicants this year was up 40% over last year and up 30% over our previous high number. So we had 9,400 applicants for an incoming class of about 640, 650. That puts us at about a 30% acceptance rate, which is right up there with the best schools in the country. In other words, the short answer is we are not hurting for applicants. People are finding F&M. They know that they are going to get that powerful education here, and we're drawing very heavily from, we currently have students from 46 states represented, plus the District of Columbia from 35 different countries. We have about 96 students currently in the student body from Lancaster, from the city and the county, and another 120 from the five immediate adjacent counties around us. So we are a place for the best and the brightest from around the world, from across the country, and from right here at home.
What's the student population at Franklin Marshall?
2,400, give and take.
Could you take more?
We don't want to take more. We want to hold there. We've been stable at 24 for a long time. One measure that a lot of schools who are hitting hard times with a change in demographics or because of the increasing cost of education, one of the remedies is to admit more students to gain more tuition revenue dollars. We're not interested in doing that because the power of our education resides in that small student-faculty ratio and in keeping it a community where everybody's based on campus and is having that powerful experience with their peers and with the faculty mentor.
F&M was one of the leaders, national leaders, in going from a merit-based financial aid system to aid based on need as part of the American Talent Initiative that many schools have become part of. From a student population perspective, now we'll talk about some other aspects of this, but from a student population perspective, what's the result been?
An extraordinarily smart and motivated and hardworking student body. That is the first and foremost benefit of the American Talent Initiative. Because there are fewer high school graduates coming out of the Northeast and the Mid-Atlantic, we need to look further afield for those really superlative students, and we're getting them. The SAT scores have gone up every single year. The ACT scores are up. The percentage of valedictorians and salutatorians from their high schools is up. The number of students who graduate in the top decile of their classes is up. The number of students who have extraordinary parallel experiences beyond their high school academics has gone up. The classes just get better and better and better.
So basically what you're saying, I mean, on the surface, many people would hear merit-based and say you're getting the best and the brightest to begin with. But what you're saying is that under this initiative, you're getting students who maybe could not afford an F&M education, but they have the academic background experience, and that's what the result has been.
That's exactly right. So we have almost tripled the amount of money we put into need-based financial aid over the last few years. So it's very expensive, which means we have to adjust expenses elsewhere in order to make that happen. But what we really want to do is make sure that financial means is not the obstacle that would prevent a student from coming to Franklin and Marshall. So our average aid package is very large. It can be over $50,000 a year in aid for some of our students who come. I recently met just a couple of days ago with a group of high schoolers who were coming in to tour liberal arts colleges, and F&M was their first example. These are kids coming from underserved schools who don't have a lot of mentorship. They don't have family situations often with brothers or sisters or parents who have gone to college. And so I had these young people in front of me, and they were bright and interested and spunky and just go-getters. And first of all, I said to them, okay, this is what a president, this is what a college president looks like. Don't think about the classic models. Here's this middle-aged woman in front of you who studies medieval French literature, and I'm the college president. And also, look at this place and look at it hard, because if you like what you see, apply to us. If you are one of the strongest students in the country, no matter what your financial means are, we will get you in here and we will allow you to not only to benefit from what we have to give, but we will benefit from what you have to give.
I'm just curious to see what the spunky students look like. That's a description you don't hear very often with the students. So has the result also been that there are more, and especially, I mean, a noticeable difference in the number of low-income students at F&M?
There certainly has, and there's been a change in all kinds of other demographics as well. So the very happy corollary to bringing in the best and the brightest is that we also have an incredibly diverse student body. That was not the aim, but that's the happy secondary effect. So now we have close to 20% Pell-eligible students. Those are students who have really significant financial need. We have about 20% first-generation students. We have between 20 and 22% international students. And we have 25% domestic students of color. So this is a snapshot of the world. It's a cross-section of the world. And that's one of our big advantages. Anybody who comes to study at Franklin and Marshall studies in what is a cross-section of the world. It just prepares them brilliantly to move into any situation, whether it's in the Western Hemisphere, elsewhere in the world, here in this country, wherever they want to go. They have learned to work with people who think differently than they do. And that's one of the biggest things we can give them.
The question I ask about the result of the American Talent Initiative and basing student aid not just on merit, but then I ask it about the impact on the student population. But there has been another impact, and that is that Franklin Marshall had an $8 million deficit as a result. There were staff cuts. You talked about having to look at tightening the belt. So talk about that. And I guess the big question is this sustainable if there's an $8 million deficit this year, which is basically year one or two for this initiative?
I want to make clear, it is a fine difference, but I want to make clear that it wasn't the American Talent Initiative that landed us with a budget deficit. What we are doing is making sure that we're aligning resources with our values, and the value is to continue to bring in these extraordinary cohorts of gifted students. So what we're having to do is something that's a parallel process to what many, many other schools are doing right now, which is paying really close attention to their internal workings, their operational costs, the way we divide the tasks that need to be done across our employees. And I want to correct, Scott, we actually haven't done any layoffs. We thought we might need to, but we have worked the budget in a way for next year that we're not going to do any involuntary layoffs this year. We're going to lose some headcount in our professional staff through attrition. So when people leave for other jobs or when they retire, we won't necessarily fill those jobs. And as new openings come up, we're going to have a very close look at them to see whether we actually need that as an essential service. So our priorities for realigning our budget and hitting financial sustainability are first that we will not compromise the student experience. We are not laying off any faculty, for example. The faculty headcount stays what it is, and we continue to hire the best and the brightest in the academic set. The second priority is to pay our people well, to pay them what they deserve to be paid. So even with that deficit for next year's budget includes the second year of a pay increase for our very fine faculty, who we want to bring them up to where they need to be in comparison with our peer schools. And it also includes what added funds we need to put in there to pay our professional staff appropriately. We've just finished a very comprehensive look at our remuneration across all job titles for the professional staff, and there are areas where we need to make some corrections upwards, and that's in the budget for next year as well.
When you say upwards, what do you mean by that?
Well, we're benchmarking against similar jobs in other industries locally and in similar jobs in other institutions, and there are a few places where we're a little low, and we're going to bring those up.
We had an email from a listener who, and I have to admit, this is an easy target when we're talking about budget deficits, but
sure.
Wanted to talk about the salaries that administrators made.
Mm-hmm.
Is F&M in line with what administrators at other comparable schools make?
Yeah, we would have no interest in doing anything other than that. So I can give you a little bit more detail on that. First of all, I did a comprehensive review of our senior staff when I first arrived in the job in August. What we do for administrators is exactly what we do for faculty and professional staff. We benchmark against the average in our peer schools. I'm also backed up or held accountable by a committee on the Board of Trustees, that is the Compensation Committee, and they're in charge of making sure that we pay our administrators appropriately. So I can say with full good heart that we are not overpaying anyone. We shoot for the median of what our peer institutions are doing.
You're listening to Smart Talk on WITF, your home for NPR News and all things regional. I'm Scott Lamar. Listen, tomorrow for Smart Talk, several young people have died in recent weeks with unhealthy hearts, not heart attacks, unhealthy hearts, heart ailments. We'll talk with Julie Walker of the Peyton Walker Foundation. Also, an exhibit commemorating history of the LGBT community, and it's, you know, going back 50 years to Stonewall, and believe it or not, 50 years for that. And that's an exhibit that's coming to the area. He is here in the area already. Those are the topics that we'll be discussing. You can visit our website to get an outlook of conversations we're working on. Leave a voicemail or a voice memo question for one of our upcoming programs. More information at WITF.org/smarttalk. Our guest today is Dr. Barbara Altman, the new president of Franklin and Marshall College in Lancaster. We welcome your questions and comments. Give us a call, 1-800-729-7532. Send an email to smarttalk@WITF.org. On Twitter, we are at Smart Talk WITF. Again, 1-800-729-7532. Let's take a call from Tom in Edders. Tom, you're on the air.
Hey, good morning.
Good morning.
Dr. Altman, I'd just like to ask you what your plans are for the old rail yards and the industrial area that you own around the F&M now, and how is that going to integrate into Lancaster City.
All right. Thank you very much for your call, Tom. And should add, for context, those who are not familiar with the area around the campus, Franklin and Marshall has been involved as any institution. And it's one of the reasons it's an anchor institution in redevelopment around the campus in the city of Lancaster. I mean, you look at that area along Harrisburg Pike and over the last 15, 20 years, and it is a major, major change, and F&M has been one of the drivers there. So getting to Tom's question about what your plans are for some of the things that those from Lancaster would recognize.
Tom, thanks for that question. It's actually something that I'm really proud of that Franklin and Marshall has done over the last 15 years or so. Under President John Frye, three presidents before me, two presidencies, two long ones, we rehabilitated in conjunction with Lancaster General Health and other civic entities, F&M partnered to clean up the brownfield, to move that rail yard, and to build a new corridor that really links the campus community and that residential area to the Amtrak station, for example. So on what used to be those polluted fields on the north side of Harrisburg Ave, we've located the new Shattuck Football Stadium, which is a real gem and attracts people from...
I've been to some games there. It is beautiful, yeah.
And you can see the baseball park right down the way. So that is all now green space. It's our athletic fields. The public walk through there all the time. People and their dogs make that a daily habit. We're connected we're 6 minutes from the rail station in the car, 15 minutes on foot. And that is now a very beautiful entryway into Lancaster. We also helped rehabilitate the residential areas by providing some mortgage support for our employees companies who could buy in and improve the look of those houses. We have about 250 of our students living in college-approved housing in the James Street area. So we took on really becoming a good neighbor and moving Lancaster into a better collaboration with the city on all of our margins. We have a new building going up right now on the corner of Buchanan and College Avenue, which is the Winter Visual Arts Center, and it is going to anchor the south end of campus. It's a really gorgeous building. It's a signature building by the architect Stephen Hall. It will look like box kites floating in the trees of the park right behind it. That is going to be a new portal, a new transition space for the community to enter into, to come and participate in events at Franklin and Marshall. So I'm very interested in doing everything we can, both physically and by engaging with the community, in making Franklin and Marshall outward facing into the town, as opposed to isolated and apart from the town.
Why would an institution like F&M, or any institution, have a role in that, have a role in redevelopment around the campus?
For a number of reasons, Scott. For one thing, it just is absolutely true that the fortunes of the city of Lancaster and the fortunes of Franklin and Marshall College rise and fall together. Being situated in the city of Lancaster is such a huge asset for us, I can't even begin to describe it. It's very unusual for one of the top 50 liberal arts colleges to be in a vibrant, safe, culturally rich, economically sound city like Lancaster, and to be close to other major centers. Many of them are very, very isolated and far from major urban centers. Few of them have the richness that Lancaster has. So we want to be part of the urban fabric of Lancaster. When I arrived last August, one of my very first calls was to Mayor Deneen Sirachi, and I asked if she would host me in her office. So I went down to City Hall and spent some time with the mayor, and she and I now talk as often as we can manage to figure out how we can continue to pull city business and her priorities into line with F&M's priorities and what we can offer.
I want to make a transition here quickly before we take some more phone calls and go to something that is in the headlines right now. That there was a story came out a couple weeks ago, last week, about a number of people, well-to-do people, celebrities, others who had means, who paid, bribed, did a lot of things to get their sons or daughters into some prestigious colleges and universities across this country. Anyone ever done that at F&M? And what would you do if, and I'm, you know, I think I know the answer to that, but what would you do if someone tried to do that?
Immediate disqualification of the applicant or immediate dismissal of an employee who had indulged in any kind of scheme like that. I'm really happy you brought that up, because I have to say that we, like all other upstanding admission processes across the country, all other schools with clean admission processes, were appalled by that scandal. And we do not allow anybody to put a thumb on the scale when it comes to admissions. We are brokers of honesty and integrity. We have procedures in place that can detect fraudulence in any kind of an application. If something were to slip through, we would not allow the student to stay. And we don't allow anybody of influence to talk us into taking an applicant who doesn't make it on his or her own merits.
But there has to be alumni that have said, okay, my son or daughter, I know their grades probably are not as good as like mine were, or, and when I say mine, meaning the parent, or that maybe they're borderline, that has tried to put that thumb on the scale.
Of course that happens, but it will not work with us. And in fact, our alumni end up saying to me now, gee, I would never get in these days. So we will certainly tell them what our standards are. We can tell them what a good application looks like. We can explain the procedure to them. But we will never allow somebody in unless it's on that young person's merits.
What does it say, though, about people that, knowing that their child may not be able to cut it academically or athletically, but just desperately want into that school, want their son or daughter into that school, what does it say?
Well, I think it does highlight lots and lots of abuses, and the fact that having financial means has long been a help as you prepare your child to get ready for college. There's been no question about that. What we're doing now is working with a lot of college access programs that provide the mentoring for young, talented folks who are headed to college who haven't had the benefit of an educationally rich family environment. We're now getting much better at building a pipeline of students, no matter what their family domestic situation is, and teaching them about college. We have a lot of college advisors out in high schools now who fulfill exactly that role for high school students who don't get that kind of guidance and help and inspiration elsewhere. What we need to do is get better at preparing students to know what their options are. So that group of high school kids who came to campus the other day, we're telling them now, you can aspire to the best schools in the country. Get the help you need. We will help provide the help you need to get you placed where you belong.
Let's take a phone call from Bonnie in Harrisburg. Bonnie, you're on the air.
Hi. I just wanted to comment that I have a freshman in college. Franklin and Marshall was her number one choice. Unfortunately, we do not qualify for need-based aid, so she did not get any financial aid from Franklin and Marshall, and we decided to send her to another college because it was, although we could afford it, she was given much better aid packages at other schools. We didn't think it was worth the extra money.
Bonnie, I'm glad you raised that because that's one of the biggest challenges in front of us and in front of other schools like us. I'm sorry that your daughter, you said a girl, right? Your daughter went to, you're right. I'm sorry we don't have the benefit of having your daughter with us. And I completely understand your decision. I regret that we're not yet able to be need blind or to have the means to go back to offering merit scholarships. At the moment, we've turned all of our financial aid dollars to financial need. One of the biggest challenges facing the academy is figuring out how we can help middle-class families get their students into schools like ours. We're actively working to see if there are ways that we can adjust our financial aid formulas so that we can actually broaden our support into what is technically middle-class families or families who don't qualify for need based on the usual forms. We're losing some of the best kids, like your daughter, who got in but can't come because the family decides that they can pay less elsewhere for a good education at another institution. If that is the nut we need to crack, and we've got some really great financial aid and admissions officers working on this, I would like Franklin and Marshall to become a leader in this field. We need to build our endowment so that we have more money available to offset the cost of college for families like yours. And if we can figure out how to do that, we will be able to model it for other schools like us. I know your daughter will get a good education elsewhere. I'm just sorry it's not with us.
Bonnie, thank you very much for your call. Listener ask, ROTC programs at F&M, how many vets? Band of Brothers hero Dick Winters was an F&M grad.
That's a real hero for us. That's a great poster boy for Franklin and Marshall education. We are an ROTC school. I believe this is something I need to find out more about, actually. I'm glad you asked the question. I'll go back and do my homework.
Okay. We only have a couple minutes left, and there's so many other things I'd like to ask, but something that you mentioned just a few minutes ago, you were talking about that group of students that you mentioned with. It's hard to make a blanket statement, but because we're talking about millions of high school graduates every year, but are today's high school graduates prepared for that first year of college?
They're prepared very well in some ways and less well in others. So the skills that we need to help them accomplish, help them achieve once they get to campus are different than they were 5 years ago, 10 years ago, 20 years ago. One of the things that we've done in order to meet that need is rather than having a career services center, we now have an Office of Student and Postgraduate Development, which starts working with our students from the first year. 86% of our first year start going to that office, and it's up to 90% through juniors and seniors. That helps them attain the professionalization that goes hand in hand with that close mentoring relationship where they're working on communication skills and analytical skills so that by the time they're finished the 4 years, they're ready to jump into the working world.
Dr. Altman, we only have about 40 seconds left. I want to thank you very much for being with us today. So what can those listening, those who may be attending FNM, maybe thinking about it, what can they look forward to with Dr. Barbara Altman at the helm?
Increased visibility, increased access to the greater community, and a point of pride for all of Lancaster and the County of Lancaster.
Dr. Barbara Altman, thank you very much for being with us today.
Thank you, Scott.
Coming up on tomorrow's program, as I mentioned, there have been three tragedies here in the last few weeks here in central Pennsylvania of young people, and I do mean young people under the age of 16, who have died as the result of illnesses to the heart. So we're going to be talking about what can be done to try to stave that off and make sure that young people, especially young athletes, have healthy hearts. Also, a traveling exhibit, LGBT, 50th anniversary of the Stonewall Riots in New York. Talk about that exhibit that is here in central Pennsylvania as well. That's coming up on tomorrow's program. Thursday, 40th anniversary of the Three Mile Island accident. So be sure to tune in. We have a lot planned coming up on Thursday. Have a good day.